This is Diane Horn, your host on the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM, by mobile app, and on the web at kexp.org. My guest this morning is Lisa Remlinger, Evergreen Forest Program Director for Washington Environmental Council, a nonprofit statewide advocacy organization whose mission is to protect, restore, and sustain Washington's environment for all. Lisa Remlinger is here to tell us about the 2018 State of Our Forests and Public Lands Report, an evaluation of Public Land Commissioner Hillary France's results. Welcome, Lisa.
Thanks, Diane.
Before we focus on the report, would you begin by giving a brief overview of the Evergreen Forest Program at Washington Environmental Council?
Yeah, so for about 50 years, Washington Environmental Council has worked to protect Washington's forests for current and future generations. WEC's forest program has three main kind of program components to it. So we mostly focus on state and private forest land. In the state space, so we work a lot with the Department of Natural Resources, and that is working with the state's 2.2 million acres of state-owned and managed lands. And then we also have two parts of our forest program that work on private lands. We have a body of work that focuses in the private regulatory space. So that is implementing forest practices, going over forest and fish, a lot of the work we do with salmon. And then we have staff that work on building basically incentives and opportunities for private landowners who want to do different management of forests on their land. So that's like carbon projects, community forests, and those sorts of things.
Well, you alluded a bit to this already, but who owns the forests in Washington State? How much of the forests are controlled by Washington State, the federal government, and then private landowners?
Washington State has a mixed ownership model. About half of our state is forested. So half of Washington State is covered in trees. That is a significant part. The largest ownership is on those federal lands. So that's national parks, national forests. The next biggest is industrial, private industrial landowners. So those are the companies like Weyerhaeuser, Sierra Pacific. And then you also have a few others. So you have state-owned forests, which we talk a lot about in the report. Those are about 2 million acres of land. You also have small family foresters, tribal lands, and then some county and municipal lands.
So let's focus now on the report. What is the purpose of the 2018 report, State of Our Forests and Public Lands?
Yeah, one of the things at Washington Environmental Council at WEC that we really take responsibility for is holding our elected officials accountable. It was why we started to do the report card in the last administration and to really be able to keep the public informed on how well the Commissioner of Public Lands was doing and being able to take a look at kind of across the agency different issues and figure out where has progress been made, what needs improvement, basically where are things going well and where do we continue to need some help.
Would you go into more detail about the role of the Commissioner of Public Lands? What does she oversee?
Sure. So Commissioner France is, I believe, our 14th commissioner for Washington State. She was sworn in 2017. So this report card reflects back on really her first year and a half in office. And kind of in summary, the commissioner is responsible for leading the Department of Natural Resources, and that is a pretty major state agency here in Washington. The Department of Natural Resources is responsible for a number of different things. It manages both forest land, aquatic lands, and grazing lands or agricultural lands for our state, millions of acres. And it's also responsible for regulating forest practices. So it serves as the regulatory entity for private forests.
Before we go into detail, would you give an overview of the findings of your report on the state of our forests and public lands?
Yeah, I think overall, there have been some significant improvements made over the last year and a half, which I can highlight and which the report card highlights. In general, what we continue to see is there continues to be improvements in the aquatic land space, and forestry typically is a bit more complicated, and we can go into the reasons for that. But there has been progress made in the forest issues, both on state lands and private lands. But often those issues come with a little bit more mixed results. The commissioner was definitely solid in the progress she's made on aquatics. And we will be looking for the future for some additional progress to be made in the forest land space.
What are the issues on private forest lands in Washington State, and how well are these issues being addressed?
So particularly on private lands, we felt like, again, DNR serves as kind of the regulatory agency that governs these forest practices. And forest practices can be anything from cutting trees, constructing roads, or applying chemicals. So when I say forest practices, that's kind of what they entail. The state manages for what's called an HCP. It's a habitat conservation plan. And that usually covers water and fish. And it basically specifies what you can do and what you can't do. And one of the big issues that we worked on, well, two that I'll highlight. One is steep and unstable slopes. So this is something that the community really took a close look at after the Oso landslide that unfortunately happened a few years ago. And landslides and mudslides are interesting because, I mean, not only do they threaten public safety, which is, of course, the big takeaway from Oso, but there's also impacts to water quality and other important issues in communities. Trees play a critical role in protecting those communities that are downslope from these areas. Their roots anchor the soil, they prevent erosion, they soak up large amounts of groundwater. So they have this kind of ecosystem service that they play. And we felt that although the department had taken some positive steps forward, we'd like to see the Forest Practices Board take even further steps on both the rules and the board manuals that provide the governance on logging on these slopes.
Are there additional issues on private lands?
Yeah, the other one that we looked at in the report has to do with water typing. And this issue, a kind of an easy way to think about it is it's like a stream classification. Does the stream flow year-round? Is it only certain types of the year? So is it perennial? Is it seasonal? And then for water typing, it's does the stream have fish? Is it a type F? Or is it a type N, no fish? And the Forest Practices Program uses water types to determine how large of a protective riparian buffer to require for logging operations. So it's a pretty important establishment when you go in and we call it water type a stream. And one of the great things about the commissioner that we highlighted in the report is she has been bringing forward issues that have kind of been languishing or had been languishing for a really long time under previous administrations. So she is bringing these issues forward. That's great. Water typing is an example. We've been wanting to see progress on water typing for a long time, for over 10 years, and are just now, I think, starting to see progress and having those conversations to be able to look at what some changes might look like. So, for instance, one of the things that they are looking at, it's expected in 2019 to really look at a stream for visuals of how you can identify fish, how you can't, make sure those are updated, make sure foresters are implementing those.
I'm Diane Horn, and my guest is Lisa Remninger, Evergreen Forest Program Director for Washington Environmental Council. Our topic is the 2018 State of Our Forests and Public Lands Report, an evaluation of Public Land Commissioner Hillary Francis' results. And you are tuned to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on listener-powered KEXP, 90.3 FM by mobile app, and on the web at kexp.org. Let's talk now about the key issues on state forest lands and how well they're being addressed. So state forest lands help support school construction and services in many counties in Washington. How well is this need being balanced with the need for forest conservation?
DNR manages approximately 2 million acres of state-owned forests, so it's a substantial amount of property. And just for your listeners to know, these lands are really interesting because it dates back to all the way in 1889 when the U.S. Congress actually granted these lands to support public institutions and funding for services, which could include hospitals, libraries, schools, jails, really kind of a good mix of really important things. And I think that our community feels, I think everyone, it's not just our community, feels that they need to be managed sustainably over time to ensure that future trust beneficiaries are not disadvantaged, I guess, by today's actions, right? So we're not over-harvesting now and as a result suffering the repercussions of that later down the line. And two issues that we looked at specifically for the report, one is on a small, shy seabird called the marbled murrelet. And this is a really fascinating bird. It nests in old growth trees and feeds in salt water. So it spends a lot of its time out in the sea and then will fly up to 50 miles inland. It's pretty particular about where it'll nest, and it likes big trees with big kind of platforms that it can build its nest and lay its egg. And DNR has struggled really over the last decade to develop a conservation strategy for this important species. And they're required to do that because, unfortunately, the marbled murrelet is listed as threatened under the Endangered Species Act. So what we're talking about is implementing a long-term conservation strategy for this bird that allows, they call it a take permit. And all that that means is that some harvest is going to have to happen on these lands. How do they mitigate and minimize the impacts to that on this particular species that is already under threat, right? And this is really hard and really complicated. And one of the things that the commissioner should be commended for in this area in particular is forming something that she's calling the solutions table. And this is really interesting endeavor because what it's doing is bringing really three stakeholder groups together. And we are tasked with saving a species, diversifying revenue for trust beneficiaries for these counties and schools, and trying to stimulate economic interests in these rural areas. So no small thing, right? To be able to save a bird, get some diverse funding streams, and provide jobs in rural economies. And, you know, I have to kind of laugh because it seems kind of like a magical unicorn that we're chasing, but we've had a couple meetings thus far, and we're really trying to put together some solutions to be able to make progress in those three areas. And this is going on in addition to the long-term conservation strategy. So the long-term conservation strategy is a regulatory, like a, you know, a framework that is happening and will continue to happen. And the solutions table are some conversations that are happening on the side to try and convene a group of us to say, okay, you know, the status quo, what we've been doing up until now, it's not working. The bird is struggling. Rural economies are struggling. Beneficiaries are struggling. There has to be a different way to go about doing things to see progress in these areas, and we need to have those conversations. I think it was needed, and I think it'll hopefully produce some good results here, possibly as soon as next year.
In your report, you also evaluated Forest Stewardship Council certification on state lands. What are the benefits of Forest Stewardship Council certification?
The certification, you know, we say Forest Stewardship Council. Listeners can look for the FSC logo and label is how it's often on your coffee cup or wood or paper product. And really FSC, that Forest Stewardship Council, is the most trusted forest certification program that we have. And really FSC management does a number of different things. It conserves wildlife habitat. It protects clean water. It respects the rights of native people and local communities. So it is kind of the gold standard in our minds of forest management. The state currently has about 172,000 acres of state land. So again, this is that property, those 2 million acres that the state manages. 172,000 of those are in FSC. They've been FSC certified. And we, of course, would love to see the department certify additional acres to FSC standards. But really what we felt like and what we highlighted here is from the department, we'd like to see kind of more of some creative thinking to try new things and have more of a kind of entrepreneurial attitude. So FSC is really interesting from an economic standpoint of supply and demand, right? So if you're going to certify this wood product, you need to have buyers. Well, if you don't have buyers, you're not going to have demand. But if you don't have demand, you don't have any product to give out to buyers, right? So you're constantly in this like chicken and egg situation. And we really feel that if DNR can figure out that there is value added with FSC certification, and we think there is. And in fact, there was a study that was commissioned by the department that showed that some customers are willing to pay a premium for FSC wood, all those conscious buyers out there. How do we do that and put the value add and do more of that so you can influence the market and kind of tweak that problem that we get into with supply and demand?
Would you comment also on the benefits of the 20-year Forest Health Strategic Plan for Eastern Washington, which you evaluated in your report?
Yes. So this past year, a new 20-year Forest Health Strategic Plan for Eastern Washington was implemented and conducted, finalized. And it really calls for maximizing the effectiveness of forest health treatments, such as mechanical thinning. And what that is just going in and really taking out some of the smaller or unhealthy. It's going in and kind of thinning through that forest stand, or using prescribed fire, which I think can make a lot of people uncomfortable, right? You're like, why are you fighting wildfire with fire? But there's been a lot of science and studies that show with the right prescribed fire techniques, another word for these are controlled burns. They're very managed. They are not scary. I guess maybe fire is always scary, but they're managed burns by staff in a very controlled environment. Looking at the plan to implement these activities kind of across a watershed, that Eastern Washington landscape, so both watersheds and then larger landscape areas, is what we needed to be doing to combat the threats of wildfire. And we hadn't had a vision or kind of a plan here. And so this is really a step forward in that direction. And, you know, really wildfires are complicated for a number of different reasons. They emit carbon emissions into the air. They destroy habitat. We have water problems after fires with erosion and runoff, and not to mention all the personal property damage and safety concerns with wildfires. But we did congratulate the commissioner on the completion of the plan, and at some point she should be looking at a plan for Western Washington, will be kind of the next phase of this work. And it might be a little bit down the road, but it'll eventually happen, and we look forward to be a part of that work. And then, again, I think I mentioned this earlier, but one of the other great things about this work in particular was that it brought together such a diverse array of experts and interests. So I think it was something like over 33 organizations helped create this plan. And kind of a common theme throughout the report card is really that is something that the commissioner does really well, is bring together diverse communities and people that aren't normally sitting down at tables together, which is sometimes hard to tease out in these policy issues. So we kind of wrote it into the conclusion, but something she should be commended for.
You are tuned to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM by mobile app and on the web at kexp.org. I'm Diane Horn, and my guest is Lisa Remlinger, Evergreen Forest Program Director for Washington Environmental Council. Our topic is the 2018 State of Our Forests and Public Lands Report, an evaluation of Public Land Commissioner Hillary Francis' results. What do you consider key issues on state aquatic lands, and how well has the commissioner responded?
Yeah, aquatic lands, and this has been both for our current commissioner as well as previous administrations. Aquatic lands seems to be a pretty safe place to make progress, not quite as controversial, I guess, as forests. And part of that is because the mandate that is on aquatic lands states very clearly that they need to be managed in the public's interests. Whereas timber and forests, you have a different trust mandate of often they're managed to provide revenue, right? So right away, there's kind of a big difference there that I think gives commissioners a little bit more room to move in the aquatic space. And just so listeners know, when we say aquatic lands, these are lakes, rivers, streams, the marine waters such as Puget Sound, and the outer coast. So DNR manages 2.6 million acres of these aquatic lands. And although most of the state of our forests and public lands, we focus mostly on the trees or the forest, we felt like there were a lot of good things that should be highlighted with these lands in particular. A couple of those are Cook Aquaculture's Cypress Islands, of course, the net pens that failed earlier this year, catastrophically spilling, you know, hundreds of thousands of non-native Atlantic salmon into Puget Sound. DNR fast-tracked the inspections at several similar facilities, and when inspectors found deficient maintenance and other violations, they canceled the leases for Cypress Island as well as Port Angeles. So some progress made there. Creosote-treated wood is also a topic we've reported on in the past and pay attention to. It obviously affects Puget Sound's environment. They have a certain chemical in them that is not helpful to people or the environment. And despite the fact that they had had a reduction in funding for this work, they were still able to remove 171 tons of this creosote-treated wood that had washed ashore in Puget Sound. And then finally, I should also note the Millennium Coal Export Terminal in Longview. It's, I'm sure, another issue that your listeners care dearly about. And this is, of course, the terminal that would have exported 44 million tons of coal every year, caused direct harm to our public aquatic lands. And in the beginning of 2017, DNR rejected a sublease to Longview to the coal company and has since defended this decision against the company's litigation, which is a big deal. And one of the things that they commented on was kind of detailing the harm from the coal dust that happens on these aquatic lands. And so we felt like the agency was speaking up and out on this issue of concern that I know Washington Environmental Council, we care deeply about.
What are the emerging issues you have identified for Washington State Forests and public lands?
While a year and a half is not a lot of time to make progress, you know, things kind of churn slowly in this space in government, we wanted to take a moment to identify some things that we anticipated working on in the future. And we identified three of those in the report. One of those was for offshore drilling. The commissioner should be commended for her early stand on offshore drilling. Earlier this year, when the Trump administration initiated a process to begin opening coastal waters off the coast of Washington for drilling for oil and gas, DNR responded, which was great, submitted a formal letter to the Department of Interior outlining opposition. Another area that we identified as emerging was it was clear to us in the last election that rural communities were feeling ignored and left out, and this was something that needed to be addressed. The commissioner smartly identified a need in these rural communities, and we feel like has begun to tackle that with the Rural Communities Partnership Initiative that she's implemented. And in particular, we, WEC, saw an opportunity with this work to look at new and creative ways of doing things. So for instance, there is a group called the Mount Adams Resource Stewards, and they are a group in Klickitat County. They were selected to be one of the projects for the Rural Communities Partnership Initiative, and they will actually be doing an economic assessment and looking at economic development planning for wood products and recreation and ecosystem services in community forests, kind of this new model to look at how do we get local people interested or invested in and having to be involved and get excited about these forests and their community and have a say in how they're managed. So we think this will be a really interesting project to do that. And then finally, the third issue I should mention is a big conversation that has been happening or gaining momentum these last few years, and that is the building with wood conversation. And this is really a result of some new technology that allows more building opportunities in this space. So the city of Portland in particular has been taking a look at this. And how do you do these big, tall buildings with wood? What are the possibilities there? And it has been getting attention because of the carbon kind of implications of doing this. But like most issues, it's not completely black and white. And while we want to be supportive and explore options for building with wood, we want to make sure that it's being done in a responsible way. So we want to make sure that the additional wood that is coming out of our forests for these types of products is coming from an ecologically managed or sustainably sourced area, whether that's an FSC-certified forest, a well-managed community forest. We want to make sure that that product, the supply part, is coming from the right areas.
Is there anything else you'd like to mention from the report or about the Public Lands Commissioner?
This office has incredible potential for our environment. So it leads both the Board of Natural Resources for state lands and the Forest Practices Board for private lands and has the ability to make positive change on millions of acres of land. And that is important. More people need to understand that this is an elected position. It happens every 4 years. They vote on it. They see it on their ballot. And it is the position for Washington's natural resources and for the environment.
Would you highlight again the conclusions from your report?
Yes. Throughout this report, we were really looking for change, meaningful at-scale change that we could point to as improvements. And I think you'll see when you read the report that there is definitely progress that's been made, both in the aquatic land space and even some in the forest space. While it's hard for an elected official to do in a relatively short amount of time, Commissioner Franz has been able to identify some problems and has started working towards solutions for those. She has made progress in key areas in aquatics, Forestry issues, as I mentioned, continue to be a little bit complicated and had some mixed results, but still were shown kind of with forward momentum in some areas. We also welcome the release of a more formal strategic plan for the department. I think that's something that's going to be coming soon. And again, the commissioner should be commended for increasing public engagement in these issues and for bringing forward issues that have languished in previous administrations. Those are both noteworthy improvements.
Well, what's the message you'd like to leave our listeners with?
I guess anytime I have the opportunity, it is always to just get involved. WEC at its core, Washington Environmental Council, is an advocacy-based organization, and these issues matter when the public wants them to matter. The public has a voice, and oftentimes I think there is real opportunity to make change from an advocacy perspective for people to speak up and out on these things. And we hope that more people do that and want to be the place that they turn when they are interested in learning more and taking action.
Well, thanks so much for being here, Lisa.
Thank you.
You were just listening to Lisa Remlinger, Evergreen Forest Program Director for Washington Environmental Council. For more information, check on the web at wecprotects.org. Sustainability segment interviews are available as podcasts, along with KEXP's music podcasts. Go to the podcast section of KEXP's website at kexp.org. I'm Diane Horn. Thanks for listening, and be sure to tune in to the sustainability segment again next week on listener-powered 90.3 FM by mobile app and at kexp.org.